We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Diane Darling. Not one to be shy about challenges, Diane Darling did stand-up comedy in order to overcome her fear of public speaking. An adventurous soul, she once raised her hand when a magician asked for volunteers. Not knowing what was to follow, she found herself sawed in half by a chainsaw. She was beside herself. At the age of 6, her family moved to Asia and thus began her interest in diverse cultures, languages, and food. Imagine the innocent voice of a child asking, "Dad, why does the Chinese babysitter not know how to play Chinese checkers?" To date, she has been to all 7 continents and roughly 60 countries. McGraw-Hill has published her books in 7 languages, which is impressive. However, she only speaks English. Organizations such as MD Anderson Cancer Center, 20th Century Fox, Fidelity Investments, Cisco, and even MIT Charm School, yes, there is such a thing, have hired Diane to speak. Her talks are informative, inspirational, and witty. Today, she coaches people on how to create and maintain mutually beneficial relationships. Well, Diane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
I am very excited, especially based on your bio. I've got, I'm sure there's going to be lots of fantastic stories you're going to share, especially with covering 60 different countries, all 7 continents worth of travel. I can only imagine the stories you've got.
Yeah, I got some stories, and my lesson on packing is roll your clothes, don't fold them. I roll them in dry cleaner bags, and then they don't get wrinkled.
I need to try that one. All right. So
that's great. And my other tip is I roll by day. So I have everything. I'm getting ready to go to give a talk at a law firm in Dallas. So I will pack Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they'll all be in a little roll. So I have everything that I need for that day. It makes me think about the day, not, you know, underwear or shirts or separate that. It's like, what do I need for that day? Again, it's been very helpful. It's taken me a while to figure this out, but it's been helpful.
Oh, I love that. I just love little tidbits that are shared. I think that's extremely valuable to just make everyone's life easier. So thank you so much for sharing that.
Hey, you're welcome.
I'm going to jump into some questions here right now that kind of jump around relationships. I mean, that's what this whole podcast is about. So what are some of the top mistakes that people make when networking?
I think the main mistake that they make is they do it when they have to. And so all of a sudden, you know, they need a job, they need, you know, they need a new lawyer, they need a whatever it might be. And they just go all of a sudden, oh, like, you know, now I'll ask people. And then they vanish again. And this is especially true in employment situations. Experience the person who calls and says, oh, you know, I was just thinking about you. And by the way, and you know, you don't mind the by the way, but it's so easy now to stay in touch with people through, you know, social media or just emails or just how are you and do some random touch points. And so, and the other part about it is that I did talk to someone the other day who I'm guessing I might not have talked to since college, and that's been more than a few years. And I had a professional question for him, but you know, there was, because of the time lapse, there was nothing bad. It just, there was really nothing to connect us. And so, you know, he graciously returned my phone call fast on a weekend, and gave me some great, you know, information. And, you know, I would do the same for him. So, you know, it doesn't mean you have to always be there, but you just kind of want to be sure you are always leaving a positive feeling for people.
Yeah, that's really good advice right there. So what would be your advice for introverts?
So you're from the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana. Most people out here in Boston, where I live now, do not believe I test as an introvert. And I've done multiple personality tests. I've done Myers-Briggs. I've done the DISC. I've done the Enneagram. And I jokingly say I've even done the personality tests on, you know, Match.com or eHarmony and all that sort of stuff. And if people want a free one, just go there or just tell your spouse why you're on eHarmony. But what I found was there's a big difference between being in being dysfunctionally able to talk to people. And so a lot of people bucket them when they're that's not the case. Introverts don't necessarily. What happens is they get burned out from too much people time. And so I get burned out. And it's been interesting. In the last month, I've been home virtually by myself. I live alone. I work alone. You know, my cat and I are doing a lot of chatting because of an injury that just has kept me from being out and about. And so I don't mind my downtime alone. And so this has kind of helped me say, wow, I really, you know, actually do fall on the introvert side. But I, when people come by, I like it. You know, I appreciate it. I'm a longing the way an extrovert is like, where's people? You know, and so introverts can be very good with people. That's a big misnomer. But what they do need to do is they need a chunk to have their quiet time to themselves so they can actually fill the tank and then be ready for more people. And so they start, if you will, with, you know, a full tank, and the tank goes down as far as energy. Extroverts start with an empty tank and it goes up. And, you know, and if people are gone, then they feel really anxious.
Hmm. Yeah, I can relate to that. I definitely get a little burned out if I'm around a lot of people for a certain period of time, but I love being around people. So I think I'm kind of in the middle of the road there, but really good advice.
So there's a term that's come about called ambivert, which is Susan Cain in her book Quiet has brought this to the forefront. And it's about a person who is actually more in the middle and can kind of both go both ways. So there's times when, you know, you're at a lull and the party or the conversation needs somebody to kind of jumpstart it. An ambivert is probably highly skilled. And in many cases, so are introverts. It's a lot about conversation skills. For my first book, I actually studied, if you will, David Letterman and a number of comedians. And almost all comedians are introverts because they're writers at the end of the day. And so they look at what is going to work. They write it out. They often practice this in silence or by themselves, and they do it again and again, but they're highly good at delivering the line. But they have practiced this numbers of times. And the analogy I use is thinking of a stick shift. The first time we drive a stick shift, it's pretty bumpy. The more you do it, the more you do it, the more you do it, the more it becomes second nature. So a big disservice I find people do to themselves is to think that they should be off the top of each show or a movie or whatever. And that's really not fair to us. We need to have that quiet practice in our own place so we can learn how to feel confident.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And I agree with that. The, you know, while practice makes perfect is kind of the, you know, longstanding saying there. And really anything that you're trying to excel at, you need to have that practice in. So even comedians giving out the lines that they've written.
You know, it's relatively clean. There's a few moments that's a little bit rough, but it's Dana Carvey. He's got a funny show right now on Netflix, I think 60 White Male. And he has a little part in there where he has an imaginary conversation between John Lennon and Paul McCartney explaining Facebook and iPhone, you know, and you have this little TV in your pocket, John, and you pull it up. And he's going on about it. At one point, he says, "What's up? I'm never quite sure how it's going to come across. You guys are really liking this." And I see that. I've seen that now from several comedians. Jeff Foxworthy, I think the other day, he had something I saw. Similar thing, you know, they write these things and they tell them to a few people and you never know if it's going to really work in a bigger audience. Mm-hmm. And they kind of often scale it up. So I say to people who are uncomfortable about networking and doing outreach, it sounds counterintuitive, but I often start with people I do not know. And I do it in settings that have an easy exit. So for example, you'll be in an elevator and people are usually looking at their phones. I'm looking for a place to grab a quick coffee. Is there a favorite place you know in the neighborhood? And you're getting out of the elevator in like one more floor and the person's either going to help you out or not. There might be a coffee shop right there, but even if it's, you know, like a Starbucks or a Dunkin' Donuts, you might want something a little bit more unique. And it gives you a chance to practice in a relatively safe setting. Another place I do it, believe it or not, is in the TSA line. And I do it right before I'm getting ready to go into the security checkpoint. You know, are you traveling for fun or work today? You know, tell me about how you like your bag. I'm always looking for a new bag, is my quote line. And, you know, everybody's there bored and they're frustrated. And, you know, and all of a sudden you have a chance to talk to somebody. And what happens is this builds up your, you know, muscles, if you will, to start talking to people that you, quote, don't know, that are, quote, strangers. At an airport, it's the safest place in the world. There's so much security and cameras. Mm-hmm. No one's going to mug you. And if anybody's weird, you have authority to say, you know, can I please move me? You know, this person's kind of weird.
Yeah. Wow. Those are great. I just never even considered that. I mean, I'm usually the person that looks at the phone in the elevator or just sitting there, you know, kicking my feet in the TSA line. So I'm going to challenge myself and I'm going to challenge all of our listeners to kind of step outside of that comfort zone and start up that conversation. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's really amazing. So the other day I was, because I've been going to appointments and stuff and I'm not able to drive right now, I was in a Lyft and we in Boston, we have shared pooled Lyfts to save money and you're all going to the same neighborhood and they drop you off. So I get in the car and this guy looking at his phone and I'm like, you know, what area are you going to? And he says, Fenway, Red Sox. That's also, you know, and he was like looking at his phone. So I just, you know, didn't say anything. We pick up somebody else and there was a whole little mistake because her name was Diana. My name, one building away. So the GPS was sending the driver back. He thought he was picking me up again. It turned out to be a different person. So we had to kind of regroup on all of that. So when we got in, it was like, oh, I'm the Diane. And, you know, and I just kind of forced the guy to say his first name. I think it was Tom. And we were all heading the same area. And then we pull up near Fenway. And I said, oh, you actually said, yes, I'm in sports marketing. And I said, for the Red Sox themselves? And he says, yeah. And I said, oh, and this is where it's tough. I offered something about myself. And he was probably less than 30 seconds from getting out the door. I said, oh, I teach people how to watch football. Because if you can't speak sports, you can't network. And he said, wait a minute, I know somebody who does that. And I said, really? And he says, yeah. I said, what's his name? He said, Gene DeFilippo. I'm like, he does it with me.
Small.
And so here we are in a Lyft in a very random situation. I said, I'll tell Gene your name. You know, you said, hello, what's your name? And he said, you know, again, Tom, whatever. I mean, and he said, Gene can never remember my name. And I said, oh, well, you can tell him that you met the woman that Gene was holding hands with on a plane because he got nervous because of flying. And that's literally how I met this man. I mean, I held my hand because we had turbulence and it was definitely a bumpy flight. in all of those situations, people went out of their comfort zone. And I think we have a really cruel, some cases that says, oh, you can do everything alone. If you need a ride, get Lyft. If you need groceries, have them delivered. You know, what about the neighbor who said, you know, hey, I'm going to the grocery store. Can I get you some, you know, when you're not well? And so part of, I think, you know, if this accident has definitely surfaced this in a different way for me, but it's also made me challenge myself to frankly kind of create a different circle around me to understand who is the helpful people. And it doesn't mean I dislike the people who aren't here. But I now know I can have a different expectation from them. Hmm. They may be able to, you know, at some point down the line, you know, we'll go to a movie and they don't want to even hear about, you know, the accident. I helped somebody last year after she had a bad fall. And, you know, I kind of thought, oh, she would, you know, be there for me. And she's kind of been there, but not really, you know, and she just, and I don't think she's necessary, but I'm not sure she knows how to actually think the whole thing through. And so in some cases, when we are in these transition moments, it gives us some, it doesn't mean we dislike people. It doesn't mean that they're bad people. It just means in some cases, there's a disconnect on the expectation.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. So I'm going to ask you a very interesting question that I'm sure all of our listeners would appreciate your insight on, is how do you recommend someone get out of a conversation?
Here's the funny thing. I hate to tell you, Lori, they're trying to leave you too.
Really? Okay. Talk about that.
So here's the thing. And I'm joking that the conversation has taken its course. And I find people who have not taken my workshops before are feeling guilty and anxious. Oh, how do I get rid of this person? And the reality is the other person's thinking the same thing. They don't want to hurt you. They don't want to offend you. But the conversation's taken its course. Think about a conversation as a meal. You know, you kind of have a little bit of an appetizer. Then you get to some, you know, the meat of the meal. And then you might have a little bit of a, you know, sweetness at the end. You know, a drink in the middle. And, you know, but then it ends. And I'm not quite sure where the notion was that it shouldn't end. And even if you continue to have conversations for your whole life, at some point you sleep, you grab a shower, I mean, all those sorts of things. So part of what I do is I genuinely realize the person does want to leave the conversation and get rid of me. And they're trying to figure out how to finesse that. I also try and think about why are we all at wherever we are? If it's a party, a neighborhood barbecue, you know, a PTA meeting, a conference, why are we there? And so I engage them about where we are. If I'm at your house for a barbecue, how do you know Lori? Oh, I know Lori through so-and-so. I might wave to so-and-so, come and join us. And then you get more people in the conversation, and then you actually can, in some cases, just kind of flow in and out of conversations, and people don't really miss you. In a business setting where it's a conference and you're kind of talking to somebody and you're feeling a little bit stuck, I really do engage people and come and join our group. Come on and join our group. I never go into a group and try and join it. I create the groups. I find somebody who is all by themselves. And so if I'm trying to get out of it, say, you know what, Lori, that person's by themselves. Let's go over and you get a bit of a reprieve. I get a bit of a reprieve. The other person is by themselves, feeling left out, feels welcomed. And, you know, then all of a sudden you might realize, oh, you two have much more in common. You know, you guys go finish the chat. I'll catch you another time. Another thing I do is I will sometimes say, I'm really thirsty. Would you like to join me at the bar? Let's go to the bar together. And then I will go and I will see somebody. I'm like, hey, for the person's name I'm talking with, I may have no clue who the person I'm saying, have you two met? And they may have met and they may have not. And what's been funny about this is, we learn to be afraid of talking to people from our parents because our parents say don't talk to strangers when we head out the door as kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we learn to be afraid. And what happens is we don't ever go through a reprogramming. Now that you're a grown up and now that you can understand the difference between a weird stranger and one person who's at a trade show who's in your industry and is probably not going to harm you, go say hi to them. And so one of the coaching techniques I do for people who have a hard time with this is I send them on a walk. I will sometimes go with them. If it's remote, you know, this is their assignment. And I encourage them to talk to at least two people who have dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Dog people are friendly. If you're not someone who's safe, the dog's going to let you know that.
Yeah.
But, you know, gosh, you know, what's it like to have a dog in the city? Or I'm always looking for people to, you know, places to take my dog. You know, I mean, people have dogs for social reasons.
Yep.
They really do. I mean, they love dogs, but many of them have them for social reasons. And so part of it is if you have this just innocent conversation opener, that why not leverage that? So these give you, again, you know, evidence and tools so that you can go back into that arsenal and say, oh, wait a minute, I know how to get into this conversation. I also can then know how to get out of the conversation. Sometimes when I get somebody who's clingy and, you know, definitely a little bit more anxious, I will say to them, you know, particularly in a business setting, you know, what brought you, you know, gain from this event? Oh, I really am interested in the speaker. And I, you know, in meeting the speaker, I'm like, well, let's go say hi to them. And they're flipped out. And I'm like, let's go talk to the speaker. I know this is so important because I know what it's like to be the speaker and no one's talking to me because I'm an outsider.
Huh.
I mean, this happens all the time. I'm sitting there all by myself. in some cases with kind of a nervous intern or student who's been assigned to kind of hang out with me.
Uh-huh.
And no one talks to me as if I'm like this person with the cooties. It's just like, talk to me. And so I found that talking ways, I've been in all kinds of environments where I'm probably not in that industry. Mass MD Anderson, Fidelity, Loss. I'm not a lawyer. I mean, there's a lots of places where I speak as an expert in communication, but I'm not in that industry or even in that company. And so come and talk to me. I'm appreciative of it. And, in many cases, you have a chance to connect with the speaker, that sort of a thing. If the person's like, I'm really trying to, find out more people in XYZ industry. And I'm like, I really couldn't help you. Let's go to the table with all the name badges and let's talk to one of the organizers and see if that person can help you. I walk that person over to the table, say, so-and-so's visiting, I'm not real sure about this event. They're looking to meet so-and-so. I thought you two, could talk further. And then I walk away and the person feels cared for. They feel guided. The person who's running the event is happy to get involved because they want people to be happy with their event.
Dan, I just got to say, I love how your strategy and tactics are so inclusive. I mean, everything is just nurturing and positive. And even if you're, even the situation of, I need to get out of this conversation, it's not, you turned it into a very positive, inclusive, nurturing strategy. And I just think that's fantastic. And the other thing I wanted to comment on is the little epiphany, I guess, that I had with your statement about, you grow up and you're taught not to talk to strangers. I'm just like, wow, yeah, that totally makes sense. You're just kind of embedded with this piece of information in the back of your mind not to talk to strangers, when the opposite is true when it comes to your professional career and development. Really good information.
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. I mean, you probably saw the BBC interview the other day when the man was being interviewed and his kids came in and interrupted the
interview.
Yeah,
everyone saw that. That was great.
I mean, that little girl has no fear. She has no fear. I'm going to walk in here. I belong. What do you mean I don't? I mean, she's just prancing back and forth and then the other little one comes in the wheels. I mean, it was priceless. Talk about no fear. And what's going to happen is, bless her heart, she's going to see that video at her funeral.
I mean, it's just... Yeah.
But it'll be the funniest thing they'll follow her for life. But when she's 15, she's not going to walk in on her dad. She probably won't even want to talk to her dad, I just love the innocence of little ones who know they belong. They mm-hmm. don't think, gee, maybe I shouldn't belong.
Yep.
Or that this person's not going to like me and reject me. They just assume we all love them.
Yep.
And I think it's a good idea for us to, really like us, assume people are good. The whole inclusivity, I think part of it is that, I went to, I forget how many schools before college. It was a lot, like 10 or 15. We moved to Asia. We moved to Colorado. We moved to, Indiana, Washington, D.C. And some of these were for short stints. And so you had no choice but to talk to somebody that you didn't know, even linguistically, racially, culturally, the temperatures when you're moving from, the winter of the U.S. to Bangkok, Thailand in January. It's, you're going from one extreme to the other. You had to figure out how to cope with being lost and unfamiliar with where you were. And so I think part of a lot of what I want to do is to help people figure out how you can be included. And when you're not, what you can do to take some self-leadership steps. And then also in some cases to be willing to say, that just isn't a match.
Mm-hmm.
That just is, it doesn't mean they're bad people. It just isn't a match.
So as a relationship expert and communication expert here, I'm sure you've got some fascinating stories around networking. Can you share with me your most successful or favorite networking story that you've got?
Wow. There's a couple, so many that come to mind. I think, one of the more put it this way, everything goes to me goes back to networking. And it's because my definition of networking is building relationships before we need them. And two, networking is the transference of trust. And so when I don't necessarily always think I'm in a relationship building mode, in many cases, I'm having a conversation that turns out to be one about trust, that I don't necessarily think about it in the beginning as a vulnerable conversation or one that, you know, that could go other ways. But I think a lot of conversations, a lot of moments where you do connect with somebody authentically does come from a moment of vulnerability. One comes to mind, my dad was not well, and I was at the airport in Charlottesville, and I was pretty exhausted from the situation. And I said to the woman sitting next to me, you know, can you watch my bag while I get some water? And she said, you know, you stay there, I'll get you still. And so she brought me back some water and she said, are you okay? And I just lost it. And total stranger. And what happened next was she did some networking and connecting on behalf of myself and my father and helped him get some of the help he needed. And it was a delicate situation. He ended up having an electroshock treatment. And, you know, and those are not easy conversations to have, you know, in general. It's what I've learned with this black eye that from a fall I have recently is when you're visibly injured, people are wonderful. They'll help you out. When you're invisibly injured, they have no clue.
Yep.
And so that was probably a very wonderful, example of it. Probably another quirky one. I'll give you two other ones. One quirky one was I had spoken in Indiana, and one of the gentlemen called me a couple of weeks later and says, oh, you've got to hear the story about how my wife got her job. VP of HR wasn't happy with where she was. I think it was the HR. And, you know, one day was coming home and just, you know, venting with the cleaning lady, and the cleaning lady, you know, well, where do you want to work? And the woman was like, well, I'll be nice and just tell her some companies. I mean, what can the cleaning lady do? And, you know, and then a week later, the cleaning lady comes back and says, oh, by the way, if you want interviews with those two companies, I can get you in. And the woman is like, really? And she goes, yeah, I clean their houses.
Wow. Yeah, you never know. You never know, you know, right?
you don't know. I mean, you know, this woman literally knows where the dirt is in all those houses, you know, and she's trusted with, you know, the keys and the dog and, you know, any, you know, bills that are laying around or secrets or, you know, bad food choices or, you know, underwear, who knows? But, you know, part of what I think is really important is we don't know who knows somebody else, and we need to look broadly at the trusted community everyone has. And I get wary when people say, oh, well, so-and-so hasn't hired me to do any work, or they're not giving me their banking business. I'm like, they only need one or two banks. How many banks do you think they need?
Yeah.
But are you somebody who they're going to say, oh, you know what? So contact so-and-so. He's a great banker. It may not, it might even be your banker is somebody you're dealing with because of high school, but you don't really like want to give them more business. They don't necessarily need the business. And it's, you know, and the person who's looking to do something isn't a match. So I think it's important we think a little bit more strategically and introspected in that area. And then one of my other favorite stories, a little bit similar to the cleaning lady, was I was speaking at a conference for keynotes. I was one of the four keynotes that blew my mind. One of them was the general counsel of Starbucks. Hmm. The other one was a judge. The third one was Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, was niece of JFK and daughter of Bobby Kennedy. And the fourth one was me. I'm like, oh, wow.
Wow.
But the general counsel, yeah, the general counsel of Starbucks, actually, let me jump in. So Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, there were no questions for her.
Hmm.
Not a single question for her in the audience. I'm thinking, really?
Wow.
And her grandmother, Rose Kennedy, had just passed away. And we were at a women's conference of about 500 women attorneys. And so I raised my hand and I had said, you know, my condolences about the loss of your grandmother. I said, I hope this isn't a disrespectful question, but my question is, what's it like to be female in the Kennedy family?
Oh.
And I said, I was struck that all the condolence letters for your grandmother were supposed to go to Ted's office, her only living son. You're amazing. And she was just, you know, first of all, she thanked me for the condolences, thanked me for recognizing, you know, the role of women in the Kennedy family, and, you know, continued to share a few more thoughts. But it was amazing. I mean, I broke the ice and nobody else had a question for her. And I was the only non-lawyer on among all the speakers. And this is the pretty, this is an American Bar Association event. And it was pretty intimidating for me to be with judges and general counsels and senators and all kinds of different people, but broke the ice. When the general counsel from Starbucks spoke, she talked about, again, you don't know who is connected to whom. And was just kind of enjoying some of the lighter moments of her day. And she was at a law firm, and she said, you know, you're yelled at a lot at law firms. It's highly pressured. And every day at 3 o'clock, the mail guy would come by to deliver her mail. And this is, you know, when mail probably, I'm sure law firms still get a lot of mail. But, and they were both music fanatics, and they loved music. And so they would just chat for a few minutes about music. And so flash forward, she's recruited to be possible the general counsel at Starbucks, and she really wants the job for many reasons. And so she gets the job and, you know, shows up the first day, and there's a big tin of cookies for her from the mail guy at the law firm. And she goes like, wow, nice of that person. And she was just like, wow, you know, I worked really hard for all my other clients. How come they're not congratulating me with this stuff? And the person who was doing her orientation says, well, do you want to know the secret story, the back story about these, the mail guy? She says, absolutely. What's the backstory? And they said, it wasn't Howard Schultz. I forget who the CEO was of Starbucks at the time. They said he couldn't decide. He had three excellent candidates, including you. And, you know, there was really not a lot of differentiation on their law skills and their law ability and their references and all that sort of stuff. So he was looking to find something way deep that he could figure out that would be a differentiator. And he starts asking around, and someone said, oh, wait a minute. I know somebody who works at that law firm. He's the mail guy. And so wow. Starbucks networked to talk to the mail guy to be her reference.
Wow. That is insane, but fantastic.
And so you saw 500 people like meet the mail guy, you know, because, you know, again, who's watching you when you're not looking, and who are you, who's observing your kindnesses or your not so kindnesses, or, you know, that sort of stuff? Because at the end of the day, that's what differentiates us. And one of the reasons why I love working with really highly intelligent people, you know, geeks, you know, surgeons. I did some work with some cardiologists one time, phenomenal, with the cancer doctors at MD, you know, with accountants, you know, when you teach over at MIT. I mean, it's hard to be, it's not everybody's gift to be, have that intellect and to have that gift. It really is a very precious thing. It's possible for all those people to learn these skills that I teach. And so if they have the double wonderfulness of having intellect and also having great people skills, they're unstoppable. Whereas there's a lot of brilliant people who hurt people and kick people off. You know, I think Uber right now is going through a situation where Travis, the CEO, highly intelligent, very interesting guy, very successful guy, but he's done some things to really hurt people, and he's having to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And so the billions of dollars all of a sudden doesn't matter when, you know, he's trashing people and, you know, saying, oh, it's your fault. And not taking ownership, whereas somebody who maybe is a little bit more, you know, successful in the interpersonal can succeed. One person said to me, the A students come back at universities and teach, and the C students come back and donate the bill.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
So, it's, you know, you can cover a lot with some kindness and some little, you know, engagement of people that can get you far.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. You've shared some just mind-blowing stories, which is so true. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, you know, the mail guy, the cleaning lady, the person next to you in the TSA line? What is the common denominator here? And it's that they know other people and you don't necessarily know who it is that they know. So you just gotta, you know.
Exactly. And you know, the notion of going to these events with, you know, we'll meet five people, and if they're not a VP, don't bother to follow up with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they don't live in the right zip code, you know, or if they do live in the right zip code, that means they're going to be helpful. Maybe not, you know, and with the assumption that somebody else isn't going to be there. And so I think that for me, the, you know, connect with people who are thoughtful, appreciative, strategic. And I had this interesting conversation with this woman. She kept blaming herself for being manipulative. I'm like, you're not being manipulative. You're being strategic. You know, and manipulative is when you're exploiting somebody with knowledge, or only taking from them, or, you know, being really having a harmful intent. If the intent is, well, you two should connect because you never know, that to me isn't manipulative. That's strategic.
I love that. Connect with people who are thoughtful, appreciative, and strategic. Really nice. So there's been a lot of discussion around, you know, great networking stories. You knew this person and they connected you with this person and something awesome happened. What do you do to stay in front of or nurture your network?
It's hard. And I've learned, you know, some good things and some bad things I've done. I would say that everyone should create, you know, kind of a friends, family, fan club list. And these days with, you know, MailChimp, Constant Contact, or a tool like that, you know, there's no reason to not touch base, you know, at least once a year, if not. I try and do touch base with a lot of people at least four times a year on the personal side of things. On the professional side of things, I try and touch base with them more frequently because it's part of what my business is about. But I think it's something to people. When this accident happened, I wrote about it on LinkedIn. And, you know, I've heard from people that I probably wouldn't have thought, gee, they're really thoughtful. One person sent me some audio books because with a concussion, you're not supposed to be watching too much TV or reading. I'm like, I can't read. I can't be on the TV. I can't. Oh, gosh. You know, so I'm fine, you know, and I do some, but I have to dial it back a whole lot more than I normally would. So people have been just really thoughtful about that. And these were not necessarily people I would say, can you get me an audiobook? Mm-hmm. So I think in some cases it's, you know, it's opened me up to really embracing a tier of a community, with the black eye. Somebody sent me kind of humorously, a little gift certificate for a makeover, you know, because I'm going to need to be a little bit presentable, you know, and that's fun, you know, and useful, both, to be able to go in and get a makeover. So, you know, in many cases, I think it's just a chance for us to let people in and let them know. I think we're really unfair assuming people can read our minds. Mm-hmm. And assume that they know what we need. And I am a huge fan of Costco, and right now Costco is just not an option. And someone said the other day, well, if there's anything I can do, and I'm like, you know what, I bumped into you one time at Costco, could you maybe get a couple of things if you're going this weekend? If she can, she can. If she can't, she can't.
Yep.
But there's no way right now. I'm not supposed to be lifting because of a shoulder thing with my fall, you know, why not? I mean, I'm not asking her to go do this right now and bring it back to me in 20 minutes. I'm saying, if you're going to be there, when you're there, can you pick up, you know, yogurt and granola and a few of my other things there? So I think it's really thoughtful for us to say, we like giving, but we don't know what they need.
Yep.
And so if you're letting people know what you need, here's three things that I haven't gotten experience with a lot yet, but my understanding is that one phase of the concussion is a little bit of depression. And so I think I'm going to be lining some people up to maybe call and, you know, just check in on me and tell me a stupid joke, you know, just give me a chance to kind of just, you know, connect, because there are days when you kind of go by without much contact. And so But I wouldn't have necessarily thought about that until somebody else had said that to me, that, you know, maybe you want to have just some people, you know, kind of like dial into Diane. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a good sense of humor. That's been a lifeline. And I think people appreciate that you're not there, you know, a mess at the same point. You know, telling me a stupid joke is probably something that a lot of people would get a kick out of.
Oh, yeah. I think it just lightens the mood. And it is it's an easy commonality, I would say, for 95% of people. Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
You know, no one has to be at my door. And so it gives the people away. So I'm going to, I think, probably line this up. My birthday's at the very end of April. So I might do, you know, a month of jokes for Diane.
Okay. All right. So we've covered a lot of conversation around traditional networking. You haven't really tapped into the digital side of networking. I'm really curious, which one do you find more value in?
To me, they're one and the same anymore. They're not separate. Digital is, you know, we used to have snail mail, you know, we used to have phone calls, and now we're doing things email, Skype, all just mediums or methods of staying in touch. I think one thing that's important, I call it match.com for communications, is what's the right communication message. The other day I got a Facebook message about something that really shouldn't have been a Facebook message. It wasn't a public message. It was still a private message. You know, it was a rejection of a project, and it wasn't a big deal. It was just like, you know, just pick up the phone and say, "Hey, Diane, you know, I just want to give you the heads up." And it was an opportunity to build a relationship. And you know, it didn't harm it, but it didn't necessarily, once it harmed it, it dinged it, you know, it was a dent. So part of it is, you know, using the online and the digital, everything you do ought to be something you'd be willing to do in front of the person.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not willing to say that, do that, or have them know you're doing it behind their back even, you may want to take a breath and say, let me think about this and let me think this through.
Yep.
I would actually use the scandal right now with the Marine Corps as a huge example of digital gone bad. And there's the assumption that there's anonymity. There's an assumption that you can abuse this. And there's some people who are going to have a very tough time in the future ever getting jobs, or, you know, certainly they're going to pay a significant fee for that. And sadly, the victims have been some very wonderful women who are serving our country. I mean, of all people to get hurt, someone who is serving our country should not be on that list.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago, I finished a talk, and I was on the bus from Seattle down to Oregon, and I was just like meeting some, you know, mindless time, and I'm flipping through my Facebook, and all of a sudden a picture shows up of some gentlemen in the military in the bus. And I didn't know any of them there. I didn't know the person who sent it, but one person was clearly upset about this, that they started sending it around saying, don't these guys know that there's facial recognition software that's going to bite them in the bum, you know, down the line when they're job hunting.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to take away the joyness of youth and some of those fun things that we do when we're young. I'm grateful I didn't do a lot of damage, and two, there's no record of it. But now that there is, it is a whole different education process that we need to incorporate from a perspective of thoughtfulness, building relationships, being kind, being a community member. And I think one thing that has happened with this digital stuff is there are people who are hurt, who do need to have a voice. But on occasions, what happens is the hurt turns into bullying, or the hurt turns into something that's just, you know, and so it's a very slippery slope. So whenever I get an email of someone who's upset about something, I call them and I completely shock them.
Yeah.
Because they're expecting me to hit return and fire back.
Yep.
And one time I called somebody just completely randomly. She goes, oh, she says, it's perfect that you're calling me. You've got a note from the PTA and they're upset about this. And I was just getting ready to hit send. And I'm like, breathe and do not hit send. Pick up the phone. And she was just like, but I don't want to. I'm like, of course you don't want on the flame. And so, you know, every intersect, you know, most situations you leave a relationship neutral, but is there a way for you to leave it, you know, a little bit better than where you found it?
Yeah.
You know,
great.
Is there one little thing that you can do? I remember one time a very senior person at a hospital was saying to me, he had a board member who was always visiting, you know, Dr. So-and-so, and he was, you know, the doctor wasn't a bad doctor, but it was not like the premier doctor they had in that specialty. And so one time the chief said, you know, he's finally got the courage to say to this, you know, board member, I see you're often visiting so-and-so. I'm just curious why you picked that doctor. We've got a lot here. If there's ever anything else you need, certainly I'm happy as the chief to help you out. And she said, oh, well, at the end of the appointment, he's the only doctor who helped put my coat on.
Huh. Interesting.
I just always, I like how I feel when I leave his office.
Yeah.
And the chief is thinking, really? Really? You know, and so these don't have to be big things.
Uh-uh.
I think if there's one takeaway, this can be, one time when I was in a city, I forget where I was, and I was trying to experiment a little bit with my, you know, gutsiness to talk to strangers. And for whatever reason, I think it was a very friendly environment place. I can't quite remember. But anyhow, I saw this really handsome guy. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to have a little bit of fun with this. I'm like, you're really handsome. Good day. I thought, worst case, maybe he'll stop smoking.
Huh.
And, you know, worst case, he'll feel good that he's the handsome guy.
Yeah, why not?
And there was kind of like a why not, you know, and you smile, it made me laugh. I still tell the story because it cracked. I why not just do one little thing, you know, an extra thank you, an extra gosh, you know, I really appreciate that effort you did. You know, what can I do for you today?
Yeah. The whole pay it forward mentality, really.
Yeah. So, you know, on the pay it forward, I, you know, people sometimes feel, I'm like, so here, you know, here's a couple of things I've done in the past. If I can ever do that for you, let me know. Review your kid's resume. You know, take a look at their LinkedIn. Give you 5 minutes of feedback on an interview, or, you know, if you're trying to make a hire, you know, what are some questions that you want to ask? If you're looking for a new client, you know, what's some things that, you know, you might be doing that are good or bad, or, you know, you could use a refresher.
Mm-hmm.
And on occasions there's one person who I've taught him well, is he will say, you know, I will call him. I don't need any advice from you. I need you just to let me vent. And I find in many cases when we are venting to people, they think that we're looking for advice. And in some cases we are, in other cases we're just not. We just need a safe place to express a frustration, a confusion. You know me. Is this a good thing? And then you might want cases. I think we often don't necessarily aren't looking for that. We are flattering the person to say you are a safe person. I just know.
Wow. Yeah. Lots and lots of really, really good stimulating conversation here. And I don't want to take up too much more of your time. We've gone really deep into some really good topics. So I'm going to try to wrap this up and ask, do you have any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
First of all, start with the people that you know. And what I can send to you is I created a video on YouTube on mind mapping. And so I encourage people to mind map their network. Begin with what you already have. I remember when I heard somebody speak one time, and she had two teenage daughters who were always wanting to go shopping, and the mother kept saying, go shop in your own closet.
yep.
You know, I think there's a pressure that we should always be getting something else and something new. I forget where I read this. Someone said that this is even happening with, you know, dating, is that you kind of assume, oh, well, if this isn't working out, I'll just go online and get another one. You know, I mean, like, in some cases, work with what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say, first of all, identify who is in your network now, maybe some people who you'd like to engage with that you haven't, and why is that important to you? You know, maybe there's some people who need to, who you don't need to re-engage. You don't need to tell them off. You don't say, I don't like you anymore. You just don't need to reinvest in that situation. And so to start with that, of where you are right now, I have something called the weather report, which so do a little bit of an analysis of some of the events or invitations that you've got coming up. Is that the best use of your time? Should you be networking with a book? Should you be networking with your kids? You know, or is it a good idea for you to be in a professional situation that's going to advance your career because your family life is in a place that's okay? And you know, and these flow in different situations. I read the CEO of Ernst & Young missed the World Economic Forum because he wanted to take his child to college and move her into her dorm, you know, and I thought that was just a very powerful statement, that was what was mattered most, even missing this big, you know, business, situation that certainly he'd probably been to in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So part of it is getting a little bit of a lay of the land. What is the foundation that sustains you right now? Look for strengths, look for some weaknesses, look for some opportunities, and maybe look for some places that you need to make some adjustments. But start with your strengths and start with what you have now instead of thinking about what's missing, pieces of advice that I would say. And then have a little bit of fun. I would hope your listeners would maybe, you know, as they listen to this and get out of the car, you know, say hi to somebody with a dog. Or I've never seen this happen or been a part of this, but I love it when I hear the stories that Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks, when people have the pay it forward coffee thing, you know, that the person ahead of you has already paid for your coffee sort of thing. I mean, it's just, there's something kind of fun about those moments. I would say stop looking at your phone, you know, and when I sometimes, when I see people at airports on their phones, I might even say to them, you know, do you have any favorite travel apps? You know, engage the phone.
Yeah, that's good. Good question.
And I will often do this at events when I see somebody, you know, is staring at their phone, and I'll walk up to them and said, oh, you know, you're by yourself with your phone, you know, what are your favorite apps? I'm always curious. And, you know, and people, you know, obviously in most cases, they're just trying to look unlonely.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I would be surprised if any of your listeners will contact you and say they walked up to somebody with a dog or they walked up to somebody with a phone and said, you know, tell me your favorite apps. And the person looked at them and said, why would I want to talk to you? I have no interest in talking to you. And it's an imaginary rejection that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if it happens, oh my gosh, don't we know that person's whacked? You know?
Yeah.
So it's probably not going to happen. And if it does, there's really a no downside to practicing that. Another thing I'll say that, you know, a silver bullet for me when I'm trying to stay in touch or reconnect with people, I don't do it as often as I should, is I send handwritten notes. Boy, it has been this gentleman who I taught football with. You know, he got off the plane in Texas. We didn't, you know, he didn't have a card. We didn't connect it. I happened to see an article about him in the Boston Globe, and I wrote him a handwritten note and said, you know, oh. And it was the handwritten note that got his attention.
Oh, you have just this wealth of awesome little tidbits to share. And I'm sure our listeners totally appreciate all of this. So in the event anyone wanted to get in contact with you, what would be the best way that they could reach you?
So the best way is on my website, DianeDarling.com. Or if they want to send me an email, it's Diane@DianeDarling.com. Happy to hear from anybody, and they can, if they're looking for some coaching or if they're looking for speakers, I love speaking at conferences, trade shows. It's, you know, one of the downsides of speaking about this topic is I can really speak everywhere. People are like, what's your niche? I'm like, there isn't one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to have a niche. I'm like, I just, you know, we're people at the end of the day. We're just people. Do you only work with women? No, I work with everybody. You know, I mean, it's fun when you are at a conference and, you know, I actually do ask people to pull out their phone. It's one of the first exercises I have people do. And I have them, you know, what are your favorite apps? And then I also have them pass the phone to the person to the left of them.
Hmm.
And that's the transference of trust exercise.
Yeah.
I'm like, how do you feel without your phone? You know, feeling nervous? Did you lock your phone before you handed it over? You know, did anybody get an upgrade?
Yeah.
And so I engage that as a conversation. And then what happens is they have immediately met people in the first 5 minutes of my talk.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, that's really good.
And then I said, okay, you know, at the end of my talk, I'm like, you know, please stand up and say hi to the person behind you or in front of you, because you probably don't know that person. The people on either side of you, you may have come in with. Mm-hmm. And so again, you've met more people, you know, and so what the conference organizers or the meeting of the conference. And then at the end, I sometimes do a talk on, you know, how do you stay in touch? What are some of the technology tools that I use? What's the difference between persistence and stalking? You know, and I do a funny exercise on, you know, what bad handshakes are. And we go through handshake therapy. We, you know, talk about some of the cultural issues with handshakes, the gender issues with handshakes. And so it's really fun to make everybody feel like, oh, they're laughing and talking already and interacting with people. I do an exercise on how to get rid of people. And I'm like, I'll see you tonight at the cocktail party. We can practice this, you know, and, you know, it creates kind of a funny, well, are you trying to get rid of me? Well, I'm not really trying to get rid of you. Well, let's go, you know, and just make us more people, make us more of a people.
Again, so much good information here. And Diane, your website address and your email address will be included in our show notes. And thanks so much for being on the show. I had a great time and awesome conversation.
No, it's my pleasure. And happy to come back if you've got more questions. And thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you. This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Diane Darling for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.